Hey, everybody, this is Richard Deitch, and welcome to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. It is Monday. That means the roundtable. The guests are John Orand of the Sports Business Daily and Journal, their fine sports media reporter, and A.J. Perez of USA Today. He is their sports media writer, as well as handles a couple of other assignments, specialists in hockey and NASCAR. And they join us without further ado. A.J. and John, welcome back to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast.
Good to be here, R.D.
Thanks for having me.
All right, John, I'm going to start with you. No, I'm sorry, AJ, I'm going to start with you. I feel like you're more of the Olympics guy than John. Sorry, John. Or maybe it's tied, because both of you, I think, have covered Olympics.
Oh, USA Today, that's our home. It's a running joke since they started USA Today that this is our home team.
There you go. John, you've just been trumped by USA Today. It's like the Martsky days all over again. All right, AJ, so the Olympics are down 6% off Sochi in prime time. By the time this comes out, people can read the story. I have a long interview with Mark Lazarus, the NBC Olympic chairman, and he cites, it's just fact. Olympics are down 6% off Sochi in prime time, but way up in late night, 28-30%. They're breaking records in streaming. They've met all of their ratings projections for their advertisers. So they would say, and their argument is, that the Olympics have been fantastic and we can't do any better than we're doing given sort of where television is. So let's start with you, AJ. Before we get into the coverage, how would you evaluate where the viewership of these Olympics are as we hit the final week of the games?
For as poorly as a lot of U.S. athletes have done, and not to rip them, obviously, we're pretty low down in the medal count. I think this has been a pretty solid Olympics, and I think the fact that they've gone live coast to coast was a very good call by NBC. Finally, the West Coast and the East Coast, even if it's some of it's taped, having it broadcast all at the same time in prime time. And, you know, this is, even though it's a late start, because it's a lot of these things that have start happening at 10, 11 o'clock at night. It's gone well for NBC, and they're pretty much at a break. They kind of entered the Olympics at a break even point when you factor in how much they paid for it versus the $900 million that they announced in advertising sales. So I think it's a good thing.
John, AJ makes an interesting point. Actually, I'm not even sure I was going to go there, but it's worth saying. The United States, as we tape this, John, sixth place in the medal count, 10 medals compared to Norway, which leads with 28. And that is a factor in terms of interest. You know, one of the things you obviously want in these Olympics is you want momentum. And a lot of times if U.S. athletes win first couple of days, people get really excited. That hasn't been the case here. But as someone, John, who's covered Olympic ratings for a long time, how do you evaluate this? Down in prime time, but up in other day parts?
You know, it's so hard to spin these numbers into a good news story. I mean, these Olympics are the first of three in Asia, and they were going to be the hardest ones by far from a rating standpoint. Like AJ said, the American athletes aren't doing well, and that just affects U.S. TV ratings. When you're able to cheer on Americans on the medal podium, you know, more people tune in. So I think that going in, they were expecting it to be lower. It is lower, and it's just sort of the way it is. I know you have the interview with Laz coming up, and his point, which is a point that I sort of look at, is, you know, the advertisers are plenty happy with the ratings. Happy is a too strong a word. They're satisfied with the ratings.
Right.
It comes into where their projections are, but all the projections are going to be lower. I know streaming's up across the board. Everybody's streaming a lot more now, you know, so that's to be expected. I'm curious to see what the knock-on effect is going to be, you know, come Japan, come China, which are the next two Olympics coming from this.
Yeah, John, it's good. You know, the summer, I think there's always more interest just because there's more sports. There's usually more stars, pre-made stars coming in because, we've gotten to know some of these track athletes. You have the NBA, which is huge in terms of stardom, where you don't have the NHL. But I'm with you. I think particularly that 2022 Winter Olympics in Beijing, that is going to be a tough sell. It's a weird place for a Winter Games. I've been there for the summer. And you're going to lose Vaughn. Maybe you have Schifrin. You have to pray that the NHL guys are back. That's going to be an interesting one. John, I want to stick with you. Outside of the viewership, and that's kind of for the sports media nerds like us, people obviously want to talk about the coverage. And NBC made some changes this year, as AJ noted, live across all time zones, which I think has helped them. the opening ceremonies you were able to see this year if you wanted to stream it. And then you can get into just some of the individual sports. They've gone heavy on figure skating, but that's no surprise. How have you, let's just make a top line before we get into some of the specifics. How would you evaluate NBC's coverage in terms of what we've seen, narratives, productions, et cetera?
You know, Jim Bell has been doing the Olympics for a while now, you know, under the tutelage of Dick Ebersol. And I think that the way that he's going forward with the Olympics is the way NBC has done the Olympics, you know, since Barcelona when they sort of first got it and did it. So I think the coverage hasn't surprised me at all. I think it's been typically strong. There have, of course, been some hiccups here and there, which happens every Olympics. But, they are big on sort of storytelling and getting in and pulling out the big themes and from each of the events. I think the coverage to me feels comfortable. It feels like what I've been watching for the past, you know, couple decades.
AJ?
Yeah, I agree. There hasn't been too many there. Obviously, there was that one kind of mix-up that it angered a lot of the South Koreans in the opening ceremony. But the Dutch with Katie Couric's comment, and Bodie Miller got in trouble, but we haven't seen as many snafus as we've seen in previous Olympics, Sochi and even in the summer games, where there were some little higher profile mess ups by the on-air talent. And when you're broadcasting hundreds and hundreds of hours of live content, those things happen. So I think I think overall the coverage has been pretty solid.
Two things here, and John, I'll go back to you. One of the reasons why I think NBC is in a better position in terms of evaluating their coverage this cycle than others is I think Tara Lipinski and Johnny Weir are just so good, and I include Terry Gannon here. They're so good in that sport, and that sport is so prominent for NBC in terms of hours that I think a lot of times your takeaway sometimes from the first week and a half of the Olympics is how you view watching figure skating. And no disrespect to Scott Hamilton, and I think Sandra Bezick was the woman's commentator, but it just feels more honest in terms of the commentary. Like Lipinski and Weir, not to mention they're fun. What's the word I'm looking for? They don't sugarcoat, which I just appreciate. They kind of just sort of tell you who's skating well and who's not. So that's one thing where I think they're helped by. John, I do want to go to you, and again, I think we've talked about this before on this podcast, and AJ, I'll take your take as well. But John, how do you feel they navigate the line of talking about things away from sports, geopolitics, Adam Rippon's comments about Mike Pence prior to the games, performance-enhancing drugs? I always feel like, and I'm definitely a harsh grader here, but I always feel like NBC Sports eventually punts that down the road to the NBC's news stuff or to Today's Show. I always feel like, you know, that's even Sean, what went down with Sean White. It always feels like NBC Sports never wants to go into those places and they want to let their news people handle it. I wish they would handle it on their sports end, but, you know, that's not going to be the case for me. And I guess the counter would be, you know, we're trying to appeal to as many millions of people as we can, and that's not what they ultimately want on this primetime, you know, drama show from 8 to 11. What's your takeaway on that?
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And in fact, one big difference over the past bit is Bob Costas not being there, because NBC would, I'm not sure if rely is the right word, but they would use Bob Costas to make those points. You know, we think of Bob Costas as an Olympic host, as coming on every night and, you know, talking about, the Chinese government in Beijing or the Russian government in Russia. The reality is he did it, I think, once over 2 weeks, and whenever he did it, it went viral, and that gave NBC a lot more sort of credibility. NBC Sports a lot more credibility in terms of handling it.
Right.
Mike Tirico, he just doesn't go there at all. That's not his nature. That's not how he does it, and that's fine. I think that NBC does, you know, their news division is over there, and they rely on their news division to handle a lot of it. And they, like you said, they just never have. Within the games, they're trying to tell stories about the athletes. They're trying to tell stories about the Olympics, and they're trying to document that. And those are stories that they don't want, that they're going to leave to the news division. It's sort of a decision that they made that's, you know, not a lot different today than it was 10, 15 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, I'm really biased here, AG, but it's always like I have to rely on the print people or the digital people to sort of tell the story. Perfect example is this. You know, Christine Brennan writes the story from your newspaper about Adam Rippon. He's an openly gay figure skater, declining the chance to speak with Vice President Mike Pence. Pretty big story. Pence's spokesperson pushes back. Brennan pushes back. You know, this is big to me, major story in the Olympics. And I find myself, I'm getting barely a scant of that on NBC. I'm getting kind of like a Tirico, you know, a bit of an opaque reference to it, not direct questions of Rippon on it. And so, you know, it inevitably floats to NBC News or Savannah Guthrie on the Today Show. And I get that. I understand that's their. That's how they generally want to approach this. They're not going to change that. How do you feel about that, AJ? Are you like me a little bit? You wish it was in the larger sports framework because inherently sports are political. Sports have to deal with sexuality and gender issues and race issues, et cetera. Or, you know, do we give a pass to NBC because that's what the news division is there for?
I think, you mentioned the Adam story. I think that was for the first week of the Olympics, that and early last week with Sean White. Yeah, there was no coverage of that. And it was to a point where when we were doing stories and we covered, and I was on the early reporting a couple of years ago about a year and a half ago on the Sean White lawsuit, you know, and I got the complaint and the new complaint that after Cherie filed it and I was going through it and I worked with a couple other reporters on it, and it was settled in May. And then, so we followed it up. They didn't call on Christine Brennan or any female journalist after he won his gold. And that's news. I mean, the moderator scolded the ABC News reporter who asked about it. And so basically the viewers had no idea this lawsuit happened unless they read USA Today or a couple of their outlets. Cause we wrote about it in May when it was settled. And so we look bad, but journalists, but the news people, the news journalists, like, you know, the ones that are there covering it, they're getting hit on Twitter because, well, why are you making a big deal of this now? I'm like, well, we made a big deal of it, but this is he's an Olympic athlete. Nobody cares until every 4 years. You know, we covered this back in May, and this is the first time usually that we get to ask these athletes questions, and then, you know, we get killed for you know, trying to bring down, quote unquote, gold medal winner when we were covering this the entire time. Just because NBC did it doesn't make us less likely to cover it. It doesn't make it it doesn't make it less newsworthy.
And I will note that SI totally was not over the story at all. So if you want to be critical of SI, rightly so. I don't believe we did anything on it in May. We certainly did not do anything on it in the lead up to these games. Before we move on to Fox and the NFL. John, is there anything you wanted to add on the Olympics?
Yeah, I got a question. You've covered the Olympics for how many in a row is it, and why didn't you go this year?
Boy, talk about a question that nobody wants answered on this podcast, John.
No, I'm interested.
Okay, I have covered seven Olympics. What, you've covered two? Because we saw
I was only in London.
In London, yeah. I remember hanging out with you in London. That was a lot of fun. I asked off for the Rio cycle. And for this cycle, because I have very young kids, and so I did not want to be away from them for 5 weeks. Also, it seemed beyond unfair to my wife to let her deal with some crazy 1 and 2 year olds.
Do you miss it? Do you miss being over there?
I'll be honest with you. I had, weirdly enough, AJ, I don't know how much you want to hear about this, but like weirdly enough, I really didn't have any kind of passion to go to South Korea, which surprised me. And I am a major Olympics fan and an Olympics head. Trust me, I realize the underbelly of it. I believe it's absolutely corrupt and a lot of drugs are taking place. I still love the kind of the ideals of it. But for whatever reason, John, I'm not sure why, but South Korea did not hold like the interest for me the way Russia certainly did, Beijing did, Athens did. And I don't know. I don't know if it's out of my system, but it's not that appealing. Conversely, Tokyo seems like a fascinating Olympics, which would be really interesting. Beijing does not, to be very blunt. I'd be fine if I didn't have to go back to Beijing. And then Paris obviously would be incredible. I mean,
yeah,
if you're,
I mean, everybody's waiting for, yeah, for this like every American anyway.
Yeah,
for
if
this
you're
cycle to end and get back to
if
Paris.
You're an American journalist, I mean, to be for somebody to be paying you 4 weeks to be in Paris, I mean, it's like an absurdity. So yeah, so I, that's the reason basically is just my kids. But I don't know if I never end up going back. I feel like I got so much out of it. I went to 7, which is, you know, outside of like the Christine Brennan, you know, Phil Hirsch. Like real Olympic head Tim Layden types, that's a pretty good number for a career. So, so no complaints. No complaints. So AJ, have you? I know you've written about Olympic stuff. Have you ever covered one?
No, never have. I've covered 11 Stanley Cup finals, a few worlds, a couple World Series. Pretty much covered a lot of NASCAR. But yeah, never an Olympics. No, I was. Just missed out on Vancouver. That was what I was hoping to cover.
That was a great one.
That would have been cool.
I will say this, AJ.
As far as I want to touch on the NBC NHL relationship.
Sure. Yeah. Go ahead.
As it pertains to the Olympics, because their contract, 10-year contract, ends at the end of the 2021 season. So basically, after the playoffs in 2021, the NBC deal with NHL is up, and now there's obviously they're going to be talking during that time. And this is, you know, I think from what I've heard, a lot of people NBC are still upset because of the ratings are down so far for the men's tournament, that, you know, the NHL didn't put their players up, and it's going to factor into the negotiations for the TV contract, and I think it's going to be a factor for the players whose contract whose CBA ends right after the season at the probably I think it's September 2022, so before the start of the 2022-2023 season. I think that's going to be, I think the players want to be there. The players are upset. The agents I've talked to are expressing how upset the players are, and they kind of, you know, basically playing hockey, you know, just in NHL. You know, I know the NHL was never a fan of shutting down the league for 2 weeks and then sending the players over. And there's always talk with IIHF, which is the International Hockey Federation, wasn't paying enough of the haul for it, and they weren't paying enough for the insurance and everything else. But it's not the same. And I can't. I've watched much more women's hockey than I have men's hockey, because I really, outside of a couple players, two or three players on the men's team, I have no idea who these guys are.
Yeah, the one thing I would say is, having talked to Mark Lazarus, and he is, you know, listen, NBC is not happy about this at all. They're not happy with the NHL. They're not happy with the International Hockey Federation. They're down 20-30% for their Olympic NHL hockey games. And the interesting thing that he told me was that he said the RSNs across the country are down right now in terms of the hockey that's being played, the NHL hockey that's being played during the Olympics. So nobody's winning. John, we'll just end up with this with you, because, again, I know you're a hockey guy and an Olympics fan. It really not having the NHL players takes something so big away from the Winter Olympics. It's really, outside of figure skating, the glamour sport, and this is very much an ethnocentric thing, but as an American, you know, your men's hockey team is really, really good. It's exciting to watch them play Canada and Russia and Sweden and some of these other powers, and I barely have any interest in this tournament. I'll probably watch the medal round, but generally speaking, like, where in the past, like, I'd wake up in the middle of the night to watch one of these high-profile games, the only hockey tournament I care about is the women's tournament in this one.
Yeah, I got to tell you, if I ran the NHL, I think I would make the same decision. You know, they're taking their players, which are the NHL, sending them over to support the IOC or to support the USOC. It's like they're the NHL. They're their own business. The IOC and USOC are their own business.
Right.
So, and let's say we're going to get paid for it. I mean, we're going to stop our season for about a month and then send all of our talent over there just to help build up the IOC and the USOC and NBC. I would have a hard time making that decision, and I'm certain the NBC is not happy with it, and I'm certain that it's going to come up during the rights negotiations. But believe me, with the NHL, ESPN is going to be knocking on their door. You can bet that Fox is going to come knocking on their door. I don't think they're not going to be hurting for bidders. So I don't think that's really going to hurt a couple of years when the rights come up with NBC.
Yeah, I get it. And I agree. As a business play, the NHL should keep their guys out. They don't make money on it. You know, if you want to make the counter, it's the best possible promotion for them, because I think it's the best tournament in the world for them, better than even the NHL postseason.
Richard, but, that's what I say to tell people when I tell them I come onto your pod all the time.
Nice.
Great promotion.
Right. But I get it. I mean, they're not making money. And so, I mean, AJ, you've covered hockey. I mean, does this, you know, I listen to a lot of Toronto sports talk, and it seems like the NHL general managers and stuff, they all believe they're going to figure it out. But, you know, they didn't figure it out for this run. So it's not like Beijing is Vancouver, so or Los Angeles, so I don't know how much an American or Canadian audience is going to push them to get the pros back. I wonder if we're going to have to wait to 2026.
I agree with John here. I don't think the NHL has ever gotten a big bump from sending their players over, shutting the league down, worrying about the players getting hurt, everything else.
Let me interrupt you for a second. That is the biggest myth ever, that all of a sudden, like, NHL ratings increase or MLS ratings increase after the World Cup.
It never resulted in a big bump in attendance and a big bump in popularity. It never, or ratings. It never materialized. And even after Vancouver, that was an awesome final, awesome tournament, there was really no carryover.
I mean, I can't argue with you guys. I mean, it feels like just more. It's a great promotion, but maybe I'm just being selfish because I love watching them play.
I agree. I love it. It was an awesome tournament. It sucks that they're not there.
It's gonna, and obviously it's a story to watch, and it's not going anywhere. Anyway, it's not going away anytime soon. John, you have been all over this Fox NFL Thursday Night Football relationship. You were one of the first to report the details and stuff. And so we know now that Fox has the Thursday Night Football rights for 5 years. What is fascinating to me, John, is, and I'm not saying this is included in this, or you can explain this for us or for the audience, but Fox will now end up doing the NFL draft, or more specifically, simulcasting the NFL Network's production of the NFL draft with probably some additional on-air people from Fox. How does this end up happening, John? That's question one. Question two, how screwed is ESPN?
I think that question one is, it was part of the negotiations. It was part of the deal. The NFL has always reserved the right to sell the rights to the draft to another broadcast network, and Fox is the one that stepped up for it. But number two, like, you take a look at this, ESPN, they were the ones that created this TV show known as the NFL Draft. They were the ones that built it up. You know, then the NFL Network came in and launched, and they took away some of ESPN's viewership over it. But they were existing, coexisting, you know, I guess kind of a truce, right? They were doing okay. But now putting it on a broadcast network and on Fox as well as the NFL Network, it just appears to be a slight to ESPN. It suggests to me that the relationship between ESPN and the NFL is not great right now.
Yep.
And it makes me really take a look at 2021 when the Monday Night Football rights are up, and really wonder whether or not the NFL is going to say, like, you can take your $2 billion and walk, or if ESPN decides, like, we're tired of being treated like, you know, a second-class citizen, so we're going to take our $2 billion and walk. So that's still a long time from now, and anything can happen, but it's one of the biggest storylines to watch over the next couple of years, in my opinion.
John, does this, and before I get to AJ, does this give Jim Miller's piece where he threw out there maybe ESPN does not bid again for Monday Night Football? Are we a little further along that station now, given this NFL draft thing?
It's a way too soon to say. I mean, what Miller wrote about is what people were sort of talking about in ESPN's hallways, as opposed to maybe conference rooms. But ESPN, they still don't even have a president yet. So the idea that they have some sort of direction in terms of where to go is, you know, they got to get, you know, John Skipper's replacement in first before they actually make that decision.
AJ, if you're just your average NFL fan and the draft comes, what do you do? Do you think there'll be people who, like, they're just flipping around their channel, they see that Fox has the NFL Network, and they may give it a shot because it's on Fox, 15 million more homes than ESPN. you know, the, I guess if you're the if you're an ESPN exec, you make the argument that things like this are habit and people are going to be used to going on ESPN. The counter would be, you know, it's now on an over-the-air network. So if you just happen to like have watched Fox the day before, if you're you know, if you're spinning on the channels that are pretty high on your cable system, you know, you may see this thing and you may never get to ESPN. It is ESPN was screwed here. There's no way around it. I don't know how you can't say otherwise, because no matter what, they're going to lose a couple of million to Fox. Fox's simulcast. It's just going to be a question of how many more. Obviously, the NFL is happy because their total number is going to be higher because it's on a third network.
Yeah, it's kind of like what we've seen the last two, three, no longer than that now. With Thursday Night Football, it's always been simulcast on the NFL Network, but the NFL Network viewership is just a small percentage of what the whatever over-the-air or broadcast station that had it is. And I think it's now you're mixing that people are, I think it's habit going to ESPN, but you're right. If someone's flipping through the lower channels and see it's on Fox, they may check it out. And so you're right. This is not good for the ESPN NFL relationship. And I think it's going to be once, as John mentioned, once they replace Skipper with a full-time permanent president, we'll see what fences will be mended and what's going to be happening with between the NFL and ESPN.
John, have you heard anything yet about actual talent from Fox being on the NFL Network's draft production? I think it's very clear that Rich Eisen, Mike Mayock, I'm sure at least one other NFL Network guy will be, you know, on that main chair. But I mean, you think it's possible that, I'll just spitball here, like Jake Glazer is part of that first night coverage, or I'm trying to figure out who would even sort of be an NFL, Howie Long is part of that first night coverage. Do you think it gets that? Do you think Fox gets somehow the opportunity to put some of their A-level talent on the first night of the NFL draft?
Yeah, I'd be surprised if it were Howie Long. I was told to take a look at the Fox talent that already works over at NFL Network, you know, during the...
Okay. Charles Davis?
So there's one right yep. there. I think there are a couple others that'll be there that I don't know the names of who that is off the top of my head right
okay.
now.
Okay, that makes sense, though. I mean, Charles Davis to me would be... He's an excellent broadcaster. And two, he has a lot of college football experience. So that would make total sense. Actually, NFL Network historically has been using David Shaw of Stanford on that first night, who, if he ever decides to leave Stanford and wants to go into broadcasting, will have a job in a second. That's interesting because I now find, I always watch the NFL Network first night. I mean, I watch both, obviously, because I wrote about both, but I would always favor the NFL Network first night when Berman was in charge. Now that Wingo is doing the NFL draft, I really feel like it's an even up proposition. It might even get down to who you want to hear more from between Mayock versus McShay and Kuiper. But it's going to be interesting to me. The most interesting story, John, this year for the NFL draft to me is the viewership story.
Without question.
More than anything else. More than the production.
How much does Fox take out of this?
Yeah.
People are not conditioned right now to go and watch the NFL on Fox, and that's how people, you know, watch TV. But are there casual viewers, like you said, that have their TV tuned to Fox when they turn it on that might stick with it? We'll see. I mean, it's going to be really interesting.
Yeah, that's the story, more than even their production stuff. All right, a couple more here. AJ, we're going to go into your wheelhouse, and that is NASCAR. The Daytona 500 earned a 5.1 overnight rating on Fox, down 22% from last year, down 16% from 2016. This is according to Sports Media Watch. Lowest for that race in 10 seasons. They had a lot of competition, obviously, including the Olympics, but those are not good numbers, AJ. What is your interpretation here?
And I loved how Trump earlier yesterday, you know, made a mention of the 500. It's actually, yeah, it's, you know, this is the most patriotic sport out there, and we get a lot of see how many the Twitter reaction last season, or but even last two seasons in the NFL about the kneeling and the protest. There's no more patriotic sport. There's no one there's no other sport that wraps themselves around the flag like NASCAR. I mean, I covered the finale in Homestead, and there was the prayer, there was the prayer, God Bless America, the national anthem on Primus, and one other thing before we even started, before they even fired the engines up. So and that was down. You know, this is the granted in 2006 when NBC had it, it was lead into the Turin Olympics that day. That was 11.3 they had. We're down to a 5.1. I mean, this is tanked. I mean, NASCAR was the most oversold sport probably in the history of sports broadcasting. You know, this is the popularity after Dale Sr. died, and I think a lot of ESPN lost the contract, and NBC and Fox overpaid, and even in the last round when NBC and Fox got the contract, I thought they overpaid. I don't know how people may blast the NFL, they blast other sports, you know, for ratings declines, but NASCAR gets a free pass, and they shouldn't. And I really don't see how they recover. They have a bunch of rookies, not just rookies, but young drivers. Dale Jr. is gone. Jeff Gordon's gone. If Jimmy Johnson retires, I mean, there's really, you know, and I know Kevin Harvick's still there, but he's in his 40s. I don't see how the sport is gonna survive. They'll survive, but how they're gonna get anywhere near what they're getting now. I mean, tracks have cut down on seats. People aren't showing up, and it's just no one talks about it.
John, AJ makes some great points. We'll sort of go into a couple of them here. And I should mention Danica Patrick's last race as well, which, in terms of some casual fans, should have gotten some eyeballs. You know, John, we're not so far removed. I'm going to maybe say 2012 or 2013, where there were so many stories, particularly in our world, about how hot NASCAR was. You know, basically one of the hottest television sports. How high can they go? You know, their momentum was just like through the roof. And then all of a sudden, just things like turned. And I don't know if it was a complicated point system. I don't know if it was Jimmy Johnson just sort of so dominant that maybe some people tuned out. The changing of the television networks. I honestly don't know. I'm not sure what happened. AJ hit on some of it, but something dramatically happened. Are you like him? And do you see that, like, there's no turning back to those halcyon days, and while they're always going to have an audience, what these numbers are now are kind of what they are heading forward?
Look, if you go back like 15 years, you know, those were the halcyon days, and it seems like for the past 12 years, what you referenced in 13 was like a blip.
Yeah, I think you're right.
12 years, there's been, you know, a general decline that's been going on for about 12 years, you know, since like 2006, I think. Do I think that's a decline that's going to hit like zero? No. I think that you can take a look at the Daytona 500 number, take a look at any NASCAR race number, and what the sport will tell you is that they amass a mass audience still. I mean, so while it's... NASCAR ratings are dropping faster than general television ratings, and certainly faster than other sports. So I don't want to spin this or paint this as a good news story, but it still is a dominant TV platform. It still is a sport that NBC and Fox are very happy to have, and it's a sport that, you know, I see it continuing to slide downwards a little bit. For the next couple of years, but as long as it keeps bringing in the types of audiences that it brings in. What did you say that the overnight was?
5-1.
I mean, how many sports would kill for a 5-1?
For sure, you know? Yeah.
And so I just think that it still brings in a big audience, and advertisers want to hit that audience. It's not as hot a sport. It's not as big a sport as it used to be, but it still is a pretty good TV property.
AJ, one thing I want to ask you about, because again, you're closer to this than me. I did. There was one year where I covered like 7 NASCAR races. It's back like around 2000. It was so fascinating. I loved that experience. It was great. I wonder, is there anything to?
Did you like the food though at the NASCAR track?
Yeah, because I mean, it was so different. I went to Charlotte Motor Speedway. I went to
Charlotte's awesome.
Yeah, I went to Sonoma, I went to Daytona, I went to Atlanta. It was fun.
Oh, yeah, those are good tracks.
Yeah, and I basically, I was doing this big fan survey poll, so I had to go into a lot of RVs, so I was really getting fed by everybody, so I had a lot of barbecue, which was great. But I wonder, like, and John, obviously, in his place, has written about this, the demos for the sport have gotten older, and I wonder, like, how big a problem is that in that, and maybe there's some other sports that have to deal with this too, baseball, et cetera, but, like, have they... in your experience, like, have they been able to replace at all some of the older viewers with younger fans? You know, the sport's always skewed older. It's always skewed more conservative. But have they replaced that group with, like, the same kind of group of in their 20s or early 30s?
And they're trying to, I don't think they have. They're trying to. It's hard to build a young driver's who name. And there's some good young drivers, Chase Elliott. There's a bunch of them now coming up. Austin Dillon, who won yesterday.
Right.
There's some great young drivers. It's hard for Fox or NBC or NASCAR itself to build these young drivers into names, because a lot of the names were built over the years by Dale Jr. was built partly, if not majorly, on being Dale Sr.'s kid, but right. Also Budweiser built him up, then Mountain Dew, and then you got these companies who are basically trying to, you know, brand these guys, and that's hard to do when a lot of these sponsorships, it's a lot harder to get sponsorship for teams or drivers last 5-6 years than it was 15 years ago. And so with that, there's less money. I think there's less money being spent to market these guys, and there's less activation. And we haven't seen much activation from the title sponsors. The second year, Monster Energy having the title sponsorship after years of Sprint and Nextel, which spent way more money activating and in the marketplace and doing more and doing a lot to promote NASCAR. Without Winston before that, and then Sprint and Nextel for the next decade, the sport is not as visible to any fan as it was, 10, 15 years ago. You don't go into a convenience store like you used to and see a Kevin Harvick cutout or a Dale Jr. cutout. It's just that you just don't see much of NASCAR being put out there even in the South as you used to.
AJ, how much of a game changer would it be if you had multiple people of color and multiple women drivers starring in the sport? And is there any possibility that that could happen in the next 10 to 20 years?
Bubba did finish second yesterday, man. That was that was huge. It's awful. I mean, I think Danica didn't for various reasons didn't fare very well in her time at NASCAR, and she has one race left. It's, of course, it's an Indy car at the real 500 in Indy. Yep. I'm not sure if a woman's in the pipeline. I think there are some minorities. NASCAR has tried to diversify its sport, but it goes back to, like, it's kind of like why there's very few hockey players that are African American or Hispanic. The local tracks are mainly comprised of white competitors going even in grade schoolers on up, and it's just the way it takes a look. That's the nature of the sport, and so it's a lot harder in NASCAR to create a non-white competitor than others, because they aren't a part of the sport at an early age at the same rate.
All right, I want to finish up. We'll watch obviously the NASCAR ratings this year. I think that's going to be a pretty interesting story. It's not a perfect sort of analogy, but if you feel like Daytona doesn't have a good rating, you kind of do wonder what that sort of bodes for the rest of the season. All right, John, back to you. The New York Post, with its new sports media columnist, Andrew Marchand, former ESPNer, beloved by ESPN PR, has now, he threw into the marketplace the prospect of Peyton Manning maybe being a little more serious in terms of taking an offer from either Fox or ESPN. I talked to Stephanie Drewley. It's a high-ranking ESPN PR person. High-ranking. Everybody's PR. High-ranking ESPN. I should apologize to her. I don't want to insult her. To work for working for Chris LaPlaca. That is a demotion. So Stephanie Drewley is a high-ranking ESPN management person and said to me that obviously they would have interest in Peyton Manning. They hadn't had any conversations when I talked to her, but that was something they obviously wanted the Manning camp to know about. She also said, interestingly enough, that she was not looking to make any changes on the Sean McDonough front. And I felt like Marchand sort of telegraphed a little bit that there was a possibility the whole booth could blow up. So ESPN obviously would have interest in Peyton, given the money. But the more interesting thing, John, this is a long rambling-ass question, is the Fox one. Thursday Night Football, not the heaviest schedule. It's a network. Fox obviously really treats their talent exceptionally well. You think somehow maybe they make the offer to Peyton and be like, listen, just do this for a year, have a little bit of fun, you get a little broadcasting in you, you stay close to the game, and you'll see how you like it. What do you think?
Look, any network wants to have Peyton Manning. And so, like, if CBS thinks that it could get him, CBS would be in there negotiating with him.
I believe, I didn't mean to interrupt you, John, I believe the Tony Romo job is the only job Peyton Manning cannot get in broadcasting right now.
No, but I think there's a high profile number two job.
Correct. I think he could blow out Fouts, and I love Fouts, but I have to be honest. Yes.
So I think that what Andrew wrote about blowing up the Monday Night Football booth, that could have worked where it's like, okay, we'll take Peyton, but Peyton will only come with fill in the name of the play by play.
Matt Vasgersian. Everybody's connected to Matt Vasgersian.
Matty V. I think Fox is a much more likely landing place because Fox has Thursday Night Football that can enable Peyton to have a sort of a national game, feel like a number one announcer, and not have to sort of travel all every weekend. The problem is that I think that Peyton Manning, from what I've been told, wants to follow what John Elway's been doing,
right?
So any kind of like broadcast contract he signs is going to be a short-term contract. And while the networks will fall over themselves and they will sign that one-year deal and hope that he sort of gets hooked on it and wants to stick around, that's the roll of the dice that these guys have to take. But I think that what's new about this is that Peyton is entertaining these things, and in the past he hadn't been.
I believe Peyton Manning is attached to the Montag Group. So good day for the Montag Group. If Peyton Manning's name is out there, the interesting thing there, of course, there is Sean McDonough's represented by the Montag Group. So it's always a little interesting behind the scenes stuff. AJ, I'm with John. I think Peyton Manning would have let it known earlier on if he wanted to be in broadcasting. And I think last year he really could have had essentially his pick of jobs. I'm sure ESPN would say the Monday Night Football job is more prestigious than Fox's Thursday Night Football job. Not sure I believe that per se, given the quality of the schedule. You have any kind of feel as to whether you think this is just a little smoke or maybe Peyton Manning gets the itch and goes out there?
I think it's a possibility. I think it's still, like you mentioned, following the kind of the Elway model. I think also ownership. You got the Panthers are for sale. You got the Titans potentially for sale at some point, maybe. They've denied it. And then the Saints, God forbid, Benson dies, they're going to be on the market. I think it could be a short-term deal, as maybe him and his reps work on some kind of ownership stake in an NFL team. I think that's a possibility. And also Peter King pointed out in the latest Monday Morning Quarterback that was posted late last night that the allure of the Fox deal is being home at 3 a.m. Basically after,
right,
I guess, early Friday morning. So it's not the time commitment and probably a Sunday or a Monday game would be.
Yeah, I think if Manning has any interest in that job, Fox is going to make it as good as it gets for him. All right, one last inside baseball note, and then we'll get out of here. John, Andrew Marchand, previously mentioned, is hired by the New York Post. They now have two sports media writers, along with Phil Mushnick, probably the most famous sports media writer out there, even if you dislike Mushnick's stuff. And my God, that guy dislikes rap music and annoys the hell out of me. You obviously know who he is. He's sort of a iconic figure in there. But I think that's good. I mean, anytime there's a new sports media writer added, it's good. And if it's added by one of the most famous newspapers in the country, I think it's a great thing. Obviously, it'll make, you get some scoops. It's going to make sort of everybody's job a little bit harder, particularly Neil Best's job harder, because as a guy in New York who's competing against Marchand, who's a pretty hyper-aggressive reporter, that's going to be tougher on Best, I think, than anybody else in the Daily News, because it's in their neck of the woods. But I think it's good. I mean, the more, this used to be a beat during Richard Sandomir's era where there were like 50 television sports television writers across the country, that has been dropped significantly. You still have the Deadspins of the world and some blogs picking it up, but you know, the numbers have dropped. So to me, anytime you can get somebody coming in, I think it's a good thing.
Yeah, I think I find it to be completely heartening, actually, because there used to be in every single newspaper a sports TV columnist, and then as the newspaper started cutting back, that was the first gig to go, and then everybody got rid of them, and there were precious few left. So seeing the New York Post bring in Marchand, and Marchand used to when I started at SBJ, he actually wrote the TV column here, and so we worked together on it as on a freelance basis. I think the world of him. I think he's a great reporter. I think he's aggressive. He's going to get a lot of scoops out there, and I'm already irritated about it.
AJ, one thing, and again, I know you don't speak for your management, so I respect you. You have to be a little diplomatic here. But and John and I have talked about this many times. I still remain blown away by the fact that USA Today basically owned this beat. They had the monopoly on the most famous guy on the beat, Rudy Martsky. Whether you thought Martsky was crap or not, it doesn't matter. His column, especially on Monday, was essentially the column that every person in the industry read. And I felt like you guys seeded that. And maybe I know news.
Oh yeah, I think Mike Hiestad did a great job.
Yeah, Hiestad, right? Okay, after Hiestad,
but you're right. After then, it was kind of we went like a lot of places went through, a reexamination of priorities.
Right.
And I agree.
It's so weird because it gets I guarantee on your site on the website it gets traffic. So to me, it was such a crazy move by USA Today because you guys had. You had like the 30-year lead, and you kind of gave it back to other places, particularly blogs.
Yeah, I know. I can see that. I kind of picked up this thing when I was out of journalism for a year when I was basically rehired a couple years ago, it was just on this new trending desk that they started in. Part of it was like, no one's kind of picked up the TV stuff. Why don't I just start doing this? And kind of felt this thing kind of fell to me, and I enjoy it. Now this trending desk has 7 employees on it, when it was just me 25 hours a week to start.
Wow.
So it's I do enjoy it, and I did. Also, and how about cutbacks? I mean, I grew up. I started my career basically in LA, and we had the LA Times had Larry Stewart, and then
that's right.
Tom Hoppart was there, and Tom Hoppart got laid off. A couple of weeks ago by the LA newspaper group. Yeah.
He's a talented guy.
Tom,
that sucks.
Tom is like, how Tom was, how a guy like him is unemployed is unbelievable. He's a very talented writer. He broke a lot of news when it comes to SoCal sports media. And it was a very awesome read. And you're right. This type of job has been kind of gone away. I know John mentioned it was like, it's usually one of the first, one of the first things cut, and unfortunately so are copy editors, which saved me a lot. So that's a tough part of the business. And it's because, when these, I'm not saying rating stories do well, but when something happens, when something like, Jemele Hill happens, you need someone there who can actually reach out and have the contacts to kind of put that in perspective and also confirm things. That's lacking. So I think because you have to explain to the reader why this is news, and I know a lot of readers get tired of ratings are up 2%, 3%. I could see that those stories don't do awesome for us, but when you put them in context, like I'll probably write NASCAR being down again. I'll probably hit as soon as I get the NBA All-Star game ratings. I'll be right if I write something off that, because I think that was a great game yesterday, and that. And I'm sure, and we'll see if that translated to good ratings for Turner Sports.
Yeah, and again, the one way to look at it in terms of interest, just sort of make it very easy. Who's more well known, the third starter of the Seattle Mariners, or a SportsCenter anchor, or a Fox NFL play-by-play person? In terms of this country, it's not even close. It'd be the broadcasting people, and that's why I think they'll always be. Interest in this for those publications who,
but I will say the Washington Post will say that the third string quarterback will get more clicks.
Yeah, but that's in Washington and that's the NFL. So I don't disagree with that, but there's some special provisions there. All right, John O'Rand is the sports media writer for Sports Business Daily and Sports Business Journal. AJ Perez is the I was not really sure what to call you. Senior writer, staff writer for USA Today?
Staff writer. I'm pretty much besides media, I do a lot of jurisprudence. So I get the sports media slash when athletes get in trouble or people do stupid stuff to athletes beat, basically.
Gotcha. Okay. So you can follow AJ on that beat as well. Guys, thank you very much for coming on the sports media roundtable. We will obviously have you back again. And until we do, enjoy the thrilling men's Olympic hockey tournament.
Thanks, man.
Thanks for having me.
All right, back in the studio. My thanks to John Oran and AJ Perez for popping on. Thanks to Lou Pellegrino, who produces this podcast. Lou Pellegrino also produces the Sports Reporters podcast with Mitch Albom, Bob Ryan, etc. Go check that out. It's been doing very well in the iTunes rankings, and I have no doubt that's because of Lou Pellegrino and not because of anybody who's on the show. My thanks to Sports Illustrated. My thanks to Cadence 13. Check out the Sports Illustrated media podcast. Some of our previous stuff you may be interested on. Last guest we had non-roundtable was Jonathan Abrams. He's a Bleacher Report writer, but for the purposes of the podcast, we had him on for his oral history of The Wire, the great HBO show. He has a best-selling book on that. If you're a fan of The Wire, please check that out. Before that, Ted Jackson, who did this amazing story on the search for Jackie Wallace in New Orleans. Absolutely recommend that. And then Paula Levine, Peter King, Fred Gadelli, Jim Nance, Katie Nolan, Jamel Hill. And you can check out on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Stitcher all the guests we've had. If you like it, please leave a review and give us a massive star rating, because that's how we keep this podcast going. All right. Again, thanks to Cadence 13. Thanks to Pellegrino. Thanks to Sports Illustrated. This is Richard Deitch. We'll see you again on the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast.
Do you know about the Locked On Podcast Network, the number one daily sports podcast network? Locked On has a daily podcast on every NBA and NFL team, plus a growing lineup of college and MLB teams. You get a daily bite-sized podcast giving you the latest on your team from the local experts. Lakers fans, search Locked On Lakers. Cowboys fans, search Locked On Cowboys. Just search Locked On, your favorite team, on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts, or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.